Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's I, me, your host and warbler, Zach Ferguson. And it's another special episode. Well, it's probably going to be a whole host of special episodes. Because I thought The Rise of Skywalker, it worked so well. Jumping off of someone, you know, not physically, like they're a trampoline, but verbally. It's always good to have someone, isn't it, Laura?
It is.
To engage with. And you're in such fucking, no one even say rare form, you're in such great fucking form. I thought, I really want you to be part of this. I really, really want you to be part of this. So today, I might mark this as the conversation lists, but the subtitle and the whole meaning of this episode, it is society. Is it at an impasse? Did I say that right? Impasse? How would you say it?
Impasse.
Impasse. Or is it societal oblivion? So this episode is going to be not about films, not about books.
Thank God.
Not about weird experimental shit that I've been working on for 6 hours and no one watches or listens to. I'm not bitter or anything. But I know that Laura comes from a position where if anyone has more rights to talk about these certain subjects, it's herself. Because she's had various different jobs, various different advantages and experiences. And I think, like, if anyone's more, what's the word, more inclined, more like, it's almost as if it's like I have no position to be this opinionated, but I am. But I just think that Laura has so much, you know, it's a wealth of opinion and vantage and POV that needs to be heard and that needs to be said. But if I'm sitting here on my own, it's like what people say it is, I'm ranting. And people just like counsel me out and say, oh, he's being reactionary. Oh, he's having a moment. Oh, he's ranting about this because he's a little insecure, sensitive man. I talk about it because I'm passionate about it and I feel these things need to be spoke upon. And when it's with someone else, at least there's some validity there that I'm not some nut job in a basement.
That doesn't make it valid, but sure, carry on.
But no, what was it that you think that we should start up discussion?
Should I get my bit of paper out?
Get your bit of paper out.
Get my bit of paper out. So I sat at work today. And I thought to myself,
as it's going on, you're like, subject.
No, it wasn't even me. It was just, I mean, there was a couple of things that came up, I suppose. But it was just like, I get text after text, phone call after phone call of, you know, friends and family members going, oh, this happened at work and that happened.
Because everyone has to have an opinion.
Exactly. And I think, for me,
Leave me alone, I'm fucking working.
But then it starts to add up into things and you think, actually, yes, this society that we're part of, that we actually have to be member of, is fucked. There's no pretty way of saying it. There's no nice way of saying it. It's literally just fucked.
And it's by the actions of ourselves, the human species. It's a great frustration. We all know that the inevitable end is going to come from not some global catastrophe, not some AI apocalypse. It's going to be ourselves and our actions and our attitudes.
And I think that segues quite nicely into what I want to talk about, so thank you. But it's...
I want a segue.
No, not that kind of segue, Zach.
Oh! You segue in.
I will segue in, so shut up. But I think there is this thing in society where girls in particular, and I can say this because I'm a girl.
You're a woman.
I'm a woman. And these women, these girls are so glued to their phones. Mm. And then the likes of people like, oh, I don't know, Kim Kardashian and the Kardashian sisters and the Jenners and then all these other famous people that are literally famous for being petulant little bitches.
Mm.
And are also famous because they have their own brand of lipstick.
And they had that huge platform, which you think, who the fuck gave you this?
Well.
And who the fuck cares?
And this is the thing, but so many girls care. So many girls.
So unhealthy.
Look at themselves and they think, my boobs aren't big enough. My bum's not big enough. My cheeks aren't perky enough. I haven't got this, I haven't got that, I haven't got enough lip filler in. And it frustrates me because when you look at relationships now, you've got the guys always looking at other girls despite the fact that he's got the most beautiful thing on his arm anyway.
Yeah.
And then you've got the girls looking at all the other guys, even though she's got a really handsome, good-looking lad on her arm. And you just think, actually, this world is not made to reproduce anymore. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's good. But we're not made to reproduce anymore. We're not made to have a relationship, because all everyone ever does is looks in the mirror and goes, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And it frustrates the fuck out of me. Because you just see, I mean, I was driving along, I think I was coming home from work one day, and I saw this girl, and she must have been 14, 15.
Mm.
And no word of a lie, her skirt was so short that you could actually see her bum cheeks as she walked.
Yeah. And then, it's no surprise that people are looking at her, but not in the vein that that girl hopes, and not in the vein that another third person can see you looking, going, oh, you fucking pervert. You're looking ashamed of this poor young girl and what she's crafting for herself.
And this is the thing.
And you find there's loads of girls who aren't traditionally beautiful either.
Well, yeah, and this is what frustrates me.
The cosmetic side, I mean.
Is that you see these guys, and they're looking at this girl because she's got her bum on show. It's really clear. It's right there. Even I looked.
Mm.
I'm not even that way inclined, especially not that way inclined to a 14 and 15 year old. But even I looked. I'm like, bloody hell, girl, you've got some confidence in you. And then you get these guys that are looking, and then she'll then go and file a report. He sexually harassed me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. And there are times where I think cases are used where it's like, were you wearing provocative clothing? Was that why you got raped? Now, that's a different story.
Yeah.
That is something that is, you know, rape is wrong
that's
no matter
very
what.
Very inherently wrong.
Yeah, no matter what you're wearing, no matter what, there's nothing about that.
For but someone they're... to force themselves onto you. Not because exactly. They were wearing a dress. You know, I could wear a fucking dress and go out and someone may be like, ooh, yeah, you're good looking, okay, yeah, da 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 da. You know, it's not me saying, rape me, daddy.
Exactly, but there is an element of if you are wearing provocative clothing, you are going to have to expect guys to be all over you.
Mm.
I'm not saying rape. I'm saying being all over you.
Mm.
Because as soon as they're, you know, as soon as you've got your bum on show, lads are going to be like, whoa, look at that.
That's where a lot of those fucking, like, I do not condone any form of sport, especially football, but this is where a lot of fucking young footballers get tripped up and lose their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they meet these young girls who have somehow got into a club. They're 15, 16, they look 20, they lie, they do the initial thing, and then they're like, oh, I feel, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, that don't feel right. I was raped. When it was actually a agreed, you know, but sexual act.
That brings you on to
and it's
the
their
fact,
naivety.
But you can't, and this is the thing with society, you know, young people and society have learned that if they make a mistake, they can get what they want out of it.
Mm.
Now, when I was younger, when you were younger, when our parents were younger, you made a mistake, you go, shit, I should not have done that. You feel a bit crap about it for a few weeks, few days, few months, depending on how bad it is. And then you get on.
Yeah.
You learn from your mistakes. But now, no. Oh, I lied. I'm 14. I lied about my age. I got into a club. I lied that I was 18. I had sex. I didn't want to have sex.
That is where you...
You raped me.
Yeah.
That Hang is, on. Yeah. No.
That's where that jailbait thing does come into play, where that reality is that young girl is looking for attention. That girl is looking for some form of sexual tryst. But when she initially gets it delivered, it's so easy to then say, I was lured, I was coerced. And that's where that system comes from of, were you wearing provocative clothing? It's fucking backward, and it's so fucking cliched and so easy to pin it upon that. But some girls, and it sounds awful, but some girls, like, that people misquote and say, oh, they deserve it then. No, it isn't rape to begin with.
No, it's not rape. It's not. It's considered to be, in the eyes of the law, it is considered to be underage sexual acts, therefore rape. However, if you go in, and I think one girl actually mucked up because she admitted to lying about her age, and the guy that was on trial actually got out of it and was declared as not guilty purely because she said, eventually, she turned around and went, yeah, I lied about my age. I was in a club for over 18s. And the judge or the jury or whoever turned around and went, well, then it ain't his problem then, is it? It's not his fault.
Mm.
And the thing is you don't walk up to someone when you first meet him and go, passport, please.
Nah.
I want to verify your age.
Nah.
You don't do that. And this, you know, going back to the girls and the makeup and the lip filler and the this and the that, it's, there are so many young girls now, and I know a 16-year-old, and I sometimes look at them, you know, when they're in a group with all their friends or whatever, and you just think, my God, you look older than that. Like, you look older than me.
Mm.
And the thing is, some of these girls are blessed or not by boobs at the age of 13, 14.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And I've spoken to friends that have got kids and they're like, my daughter's like 12 and she's got boobs of a 20-year-old. And it's terrifying because the thing is even if they're not looking for that attention, they're going to get it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's sad. But what makes it worse is when these girls dress up like Kim Kardashian or whoever else. I can't think of any other big icon.
Literally any celebrity now.
And this is the thing, is that we are aspiring to be the wrong people.
Mm. It's cosmeticism. It is a plague. It is a virus. And it's perpetuated by online media and casting an image of yourself that you want others to see. But then that then breeds an existential crisis for this new Generation Z, Generation Millennials, Generation you fucking morons. This generation of, oh, that person didn't like it. Oh, I didn't get like 15 likes like Kalisha did. Well, Kalisha's a slapper who's 25 and does fuck all and just jiggles her bum on Instagram. And you aspire to, like, you know, it's like... And also it's a lacking of taking these mediums. And I've said this before on the podcast. There's these filters, there's these things. It makes you look perfect. It's hilarious. It
makes you look like a dog.
Yeah, it's a 3-minute wonder thing of, ha, how cute. I see these devices and I'm like, I was dreaming of this type of stuff to use at fucking... when I was doing film at college. And then I think, put your mind to it, use these devices, subvert the expectation, but they don't anymore. Instead of self-expression, it's done through makeup, and I know a lot of people feel like it, but there is an artistry to makeup. This is why I like drag acts, because they personify that basis of this. But we're talking about young girls who aspire to be influencers and with no other prospects. And with it comes that expectation, the bullying, and the overall... What is the word where it's just like, it's... I'm losing my fucking thread. It's peer pressure.
Yeah, it is. And I think...
You know, I'm not born from, like, groups anymore. It's born from the hive of social media.
Yeah. And, I mean, as you know, I don't have Instagram. I only downloaded Twitter so I could tweet Nestle and moan at them because they put gluten in Smarties.
You bastards! And you had a reply for that, didn't you, Nestle? But if you'd like to sponsor this podcast, please do.
But no, don't bother unless you stop taking your bloody gluten out of your Smarties. The thing is, I have Facebook. Why do I have Facebook? Because I had international students when I was younger, and actually that's the best way for me to keep in contact with them. And we don't necessarily message each other. It's just nice every now and then when I go, oh, so-and-so's pregnant.
Mm.
And, you know, or so-and-so's got married, blah, blah, blah. I only have Facebook for that reason, and for my grandma to randomly stalk my 2008 photos and like them and go, this is a wonderful picture. And I go, please, grandma, stop. You know, that's the only reason why I have Facebook, and it's actually to keep in contact with those long distance acquaintances or people that I know, or, you know, almost family members, I suppose. Mm. But I don't have Twitter. Well, I don't use Twitter unless it is to literally tweet Nestle to moan at them about the gluten, and then I haven't used it since.
Mm.
I don't have Instagram. I downloaded Instagram for like one day, said this is a bunch of absolute bullshit, and deleted it again. Mm. Because the thing is, all it is a load of these girls saying, oh, this is how you can make your eyebrows look more like sluts. I don't want my eyebrows.
This is how perfect my existence is. And then that gets you, it gets certain. I've gone through it where I see, like, because I'm in a position that I'm a, how is it best described? I am a public figure in what I do.
Yeah.
So there's that persona thing where you have to try and appeal to the people. I don't do that anymore. I am just me. But I need that platform to network, to try and get things out there. It's used as a networking platform to meet aspiring, inspired collaborators of the artistry.
But you're using social media in the way in which it was created to be used.
Mm.
That is how it was created.
But there's even within this world, though, there was points where I'd say, I would have an existential crisis of, why is this guy able to go to events? Why is he getting more books sold? Why is he getting picked up by this publisher? And you just can't live your life through that anymore. You can't live vicariously through this window, because this one person may be showing you all the good stuff in their life, but they may have pancreatic cancer that they don't want to show. If you know my gist, it is obsessional. Why is no one liking this? Why is no one liking that? But then it's fleeting for me. I even said something earlier. I said, I've written a really big review for Jojo Rabbit and no one's interested. And then I'm like, fair dues. I wouldn't read it, to be honest. Which I will probably read out for a future episode. And I don't know why I'm pointing at my phone like the audience. Like, yeah, we're on
like they can actually hear you. We're actually secretly being filmed and everyone can see you. we're in our pajamas,
mm.
And I've got toothpaste down my t-shirt. So yeah,
we are in our element, and one of my balls is hanging out now. Let's slap it.
That's disgusting.
Slap that bowl.
But I think, you know, that I saw this post a little while ago, and I don't know who it was. It was just something that went viral because somebody had absolutely annihilated this woman for no good reason. And this woman had basically posted a photo. She'd gone travelling in America.
Mm.
She'd gone backpacking. And she took this photo and she looked fantastic. She looked really healthy. She looked really happy. And then about 2 weeks later, she came back off her trip and she uploaded a Facebook status about how she's had a really tough time with mental health recently.
Mm.
And this girl commented on it saying, if you've got a problem with your mental health, why don't you start posting photos of you when you're miserable? And it's, I've read it and I reread it. And you know when you have to reread something about five times before you go, you're clearly that stupid. Yeah. You are actually that stupid to say something.
Well, that shit
like
doesn't
that.
Need to be cast out there. And the majority of the people who do those posts want the attention and aren't actually got mental health
but
issues.
But this woman had posted a photo and then she felt
her personal
that she
story.
Had to
she
go can... back and say to this woman and justify why she posted this photo. Why is it that we have to judge everyone all the time? Oh, well, you can't be depressed because you smiled in that photo. You can't be depressed because you just laughed at my joke.
Mm.
Well, no, actually. Some of us can live with depression, with anxiety, with bipolar, with all the other mental health issues that I can't be bothered to name because there are about 5 million of them. We can live with those things in a high-functioning state.
Mm.
We don't have to sit there and wallow in our own self-pity.
No.
You know, and so many people, like, obviously I lost my dad, what, two and a half years ago?
Mm.
And within, no, it wasn't even that, the same day, about 2 hours after I found out that he died, somebody told a joke, I was still at work before I went home, so somebody told a joke and I was in fucking hysterics, and they were all staring at me like, what's the matter with you? It's like, just because I've lost someone and I'm grieving and I'm in shock doesn't mean I can't still be human.
No, no,
if you tell a funny joke, I can still laugh. But it's not accepted.
How fucking dare you? Why are you not in a corner crying? Mascara everywhere, sniffling into your arms. That's the thing. It doesn't live up to an embodiment or cliched bracket. And because people make it, it's just, oh, people, bastards.
But this is the thing about society, is that everything has to live up to the expectation of the other. And if somebody else has got a different expectation entirely, and we have to live up to that expectation. And we're just constantly raising the bar higher and higher and higher to the point that no fucker can actually get that high. And then we find that 12-year-olds jumping off cliffs.
Mm.
You know, and that's a really fucking serious issue. It's not something that I'm just sort of batting away. But this is what's happening, is that we're setting this bar so high for our kids, for even for the adults.
And you can't you can't win.
No, you can't. And you can't get that high. And it's depressing as shit. Like, I sit here sometimes and I think, right, what am I doing that's wrong? Because I haven't got any friends. Sorry, I've got one friend, just in case she listens and thinks I've completely excluded her from my life. I've got one, you know, one really, really close friend, but that's all I've got. And I just think, actually, do I need loads of friends that think I'm this or I think I'm that or backstab me or bitch behind my back or do this or do that? Really? No, I don't. And actually, I know that I can be happy in my own skin, not having to meet somebody else's standards.
Yeah. That's the fucking truth of it, isn't it? Like, there's a certain area in the UK, a town or whatever, called Peacehaven. And both me and Laura have our own associations based there within. And what was so unnatural was we had the same experiences contained within that sector and that world of the people who occupied it, the personalities and the traits and the negativity, who were our supposed friends. And it was like a group. And then you realise as soon as you extract them, you have a much like better outlook.
But when you're in that group, and I think you experience this as well, when you're in that group, you're desperate.
Yeah.
Desperate to have their friendship. You fucking buy their friendship. Yeah. Like, yeah, you want some fags? Yeah, yeah. Because I was taught.
I'm going to buy a 20 pack of Fosters. No, I won't touch one. You can have them.
Yeah, but this is the thing. And because I was taught, there was a shop specifically in the town that would sell to me because they genuinely thought I was over the age. And so I sat there and I'm like, yeah, I'll go and get your fags because I was desperate for that friendship, desperate for that love, that care, when actually...
For that faux reality of companionship and group
and approval.
Sorority, yeah.
It's approval, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's literally everything is approval. If I do that, they'll approve of me. And I've always been a little bit strange, and I've always been a bit outcast.
Mm.
So I thought, oh yeah, if I just do this one more thing, they'll properly accept me into the group.
And then even if and when you try to tailor, like I was known throughout my time in schools and groups as a weirdo, freak, fat boy. And then when I got to a certain thing, I knew that, because I was so insecure in myself and my who I was and what I'm doing, I didn't. It's not until I've always said this about my autism, until I accepted my autism, I wasn't really me. So I was this character, and it was because of my own insecurities and my own, you know, like really, like it was. I had to be a character. So fuss, I have a reason for people to point and go, oh, what a fucking hyperactive dickhead. And in a certain group and a certain calibre and a certain mind frame of people congregate towards you because you're this person who's pumping out jokes left, right and centre. You're the joker and the enigmatic, like almost slapstick comedy guy who will do anything. Like, what is that going to do next? He's controversial. If he's not wandering around the school grounds known as the wanderer, he's known as the hyperactive dickhead. And then that one day that you are just exhausted, they're like, jump, monkey! Fucking jump! 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 Why aren't you being funny? Why are you really depressed? And when I went to college, this kid called Lewis was there. And I did. I fell into deep, dark depression. That's what led me to leave college, which I think was for the best, because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do because of systemisation. You need to have a good grade in maths so you can then go into the proper class for filmmaking kids. Why do I need maths to go into a filmmaking class? Oh, you go into a BTEC class. Joy! Why do I need to do maths for that? And this kid, Lewis, went, Zach, what's wrong? What's wrong, Zach? You seem really depressed. I turned around and went, because I am? And after that, it was like he didn't want to talk to me because I wasn't that clown and that obnoxious dickhead. And I didn't waste my time trying to entertain and get approval from all these people who aren't going to have a marked change in my existence or my life.
But do you know what's funny? Is that, and it's not funny at all, I mean ironic, really.
Ironic.
Is that, actually, no, it is kind of amusing because it's like pathetic amusing, not like actually ha-ha funny.
No.
But when we were younger, like you've just explained, if somebody said to you, like, oh, I think you might be depressed, and if you actually said, yeah, I am, they'd back off and like, whoa, don't want to be anywhere near you.
Unless you were doing it, to begin with, in a vocalised fashion, which is just almost showboating.
But now,
depression is a fad and a fashion.
Exactly. It never used to be. Like, when I was diagnosed with depression at a relatively young age.
That's what we share as well, yeah.
And it was, then it was like, oh, she's fucking psycho. Mm. Leave her well out of it. You know,
but that person in question who's giving you shit for going through a troubling time will happily go online and go, fuck my life, I can't deal with this. I'm so depressed. I feel sorry for me. But in the actuality and reality of this fucking world, when you're honest, like I see loads of people and creatives who fall in. As an artist, it is a very lonely, isolated place. But I think you need to channel these emotions. And there's a certain filmmaker, indie filmmaker, very talented man. But he needs that fuel. Every day it's about, I don't want to live, I can't do this. And when it hits a certain amount of comments in the sections, I see that he perks up. But this is every fucking day. And I realise there may be inherent mental health issues, but you're feeding off this complacent motion of events that you need to fuss channel. And it's not healthy because eventually it's going to burn out. And eventually people will start ostracising you because they see it for what it is, a cry for attention.
But they won't.
They just keep feeding into it.
So somebody phoned me today, my friend, and he said to me, he said, Laura, he said, I can't fucking do this anymore. And I've gone, oh, what now?
Mm.
And he said, I've been sat at work. I said, yeah, me too. Join the club, mate. He said, no, but he said, this woman, I'm dealing with her, right? She's my colleague. She's supposed to be part of my team.
Mm.
And I went, yeah, what's your point? Well, she's sitting there going, oh, I've been off sick for 3 weeks, I can't do it. And I said, well, you know how I feel about that, mate.
Mm.
And he said, well, what am I supposed to do? I said, well, what do you want me to say to you? Because if you say, oh, poor you, you're giving them exactly what they want. And if you act like, you know, if you say to them, buck up your ideas, mate, all that's going to happen is they're going to go, oh, look what he just said to me. He's just been really horrible to me. I've got mental health issues. You can't actually win anymore.
No.
You used to. you used to get to the point where, like my mum always said to me when I was having trouble at school, she's like, ignore them, it'll go away. Ignore them, it'll go away. Ignore them, it'll go away. And when I was really young, it did. Mm. If you ignored people for long enough, they'd go, I'm bored now. But people don't
do
that.
It's the same with like the indie community.
People don't do that anymore.
No.
If you ignore a situation, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and it literally perpetuates.
Especially for your friend, if it's in a working environment, you can't get out of it sometimes.
No, you can't.
You're trapped by it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's this case of you, and it's horrible because that you should be put in this predicament of, well, you need to accept it or fuck off yourself. But I'm not the issue. The other person's the issue. And they're like, and this is the attitude of a lot of people I've come across in my life. If it's only an issue because you're making it. Mm. What kind of cop-out fucking answer is that?
Yeah. But the thing is 9 times out of 10, yeah, I am making an issue because they've created it in the first place. And I am perpetuating it because I don't think it's right.
But you're the one who wants to finish it. This is why you bring it up. You're like, either they're going to continue making my life fucking live in hell with their attitudes and their behaviours. And I'm telling you now, I'm mentioning it and bringing it up because I want it to stop.
Exactly. But the thing is you can't win now because you have to be so careful around legal issues, around things like...
What, that person five law. Cubicles or 5 foot from you in a fucking queue getting your shopping is going to think and say.
Yeah, and this is the thing. And I went to a training course once and this guy said to me, he said, a colleague has sat with you and has said something to you that could be considered to be discriminatory or inappropriate. I said, right, okay. He said, you think it's funny. Your colleague thinks it's funny. I went, great. Have a laugh.
It's amongst us.
Fantastic. He said, Sally over there, she overhears your conversation. And I went, right, okay, good for Sally. And he said to me, he said, now, can she report your colleague for being inappropriate and discriminatory? I went, no.
No.
Of course not. No way.
Because you've got your own bond, you've got your own relationship, your own sector with them, so they don't know the correlation or the context.
But do you know what employment law says?
What?
She can report them.
She can go suck a dick!
But that means that that person, that colleague, that's had a lot
of... Oh shit, someone outside heard that. Am I going to get reported?
Exactly. But this is what I'm saying. This person now is facing a discriminatory meeting or even dismissal, losing their job, because they've said something discriminatory against someone and someone else has overheard, either in context or out of context, and has reported them for being that way. But that's allowed. That's legitimate.
That's allowed, but that's backwards. That is medieval. That is just... It is like Chinese whispers in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
They are hearing what they want to hear and they are imbuing... Their own biased context. And this is the thing that I can relate to, again, with the indie scene. I've had loads of conversations with loads of writers. Within your own personal grounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's between me and a co-worker or a friend. And I've said a few things about certain publishers and editors that I would never, ever, ever want to be said out loud. But as soon as you are no longer part of that clique or friendship, they take these words and then they throw it out of context. So then I'm vilified for calling this woman, that person, this or that, but it was a joke amongst me and the person in question.
And that person probably went, hey, yeah, Zach, you're really right. That's
they
hilarious.
Did, and they perpetuated it and got me into a false sense of complacency, thinking, this guy's my mate, he's never going to speak about it. And then this dick weasel, Bob, and I will say it, Bob Freeville, goes on a platform and says, Zach called this person this and that. Not in a public sense, but us joking around. What if I came out and actually said to them, do you want to know what Bob Freeville said about her as well? And this is to do with an author called C.V. Hunt.
But the thing is, and it's like, even if you did go back and said, guess what he said, they'd go, you're just trying to make up
exactly,
for what you said. And
exactly.
This is where things are so twisted, they are so wrong, because we are constantly sitting in this world where we're terrified of what we're going to say and what we, you know, what we can and can't say. We're terrified of being overheard. I mean...
Jesus. I'm not anymore.
No, but this is the thing. Like, how many times have we changed the way that we can describe someone of a different race?
Oh!
When I was younger, we used to call them coloured, right? Then it's not coloured, it's black, white, mixed.
Someone called me racist because I described Halle Berry as half-caste.
Yeah, see, we used to be able to say half-caste. Now we can't say half-caste. Now we have to say mixed race. And, I mean, there is an element of everybody's human. I have no problem about race. If you're black, white, green, yellow, orange, I couldn't give a crap.
Well, it goes into the labelling thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you look like Bart Simpson, I'm like, you're right, mate, sure you
oh, mate, that'd be sick.
But as long as your liver's okay.
I was going to say that. Is your liver all right? Cowabunga, dude. Okay, you're just yellow.
Yeah, but you know, I don't care what colour someone is, but my point is you can't say anything anymore.
No. Like, even me mentioning the author's name in question, someone's going to listen to this and go, did you hear Zach call Bob Freeth a shit weasel? Well, he is a shit weasel. And he can take that to the bank. He can put that in his pipe and smoke it. And when it comes to this author and glorious editor called C.V. Hunt, the whole context behind it was the woman called me a fraudster because I wasn't... Because at a time I was working with a publication house and I said, me and the other person in question, don't want to name him because it would just, you know, glorify him because he's amazing. Not... our rule was we're not gonna edit your short stories so it fits into the conformity thing. We'll edit it if it needs be. And she said, there's something fraudulent going on here. And two guys trying to, like, the publication house was in existence way before me. But when I got injected into it, it blew up into a big bad fashion because I was the face of it. And then she saw these two young bucks trying to do something positive. And she threw out a negative, saying we're fraudulent. So I called her a certain thing, and he thought it was funny. Someone else thought it was funny. Us as a group, together, agreed upon it. And then when you fall out, they say, do you know what he refers to her as? Yeah, I refer to her as that, because she's done wrong by me. No one believed it. They're like, you're making it up. That doesn't... And then when I started explaining about how I process things, and how I may say things that later I may regret because of my autism, they then... evilly say, he's a spastic, he's a retard, he needs to sort his autism out, he can't have his autism, excusing things. Well, I've never done that in my life, but people needed to realise autism is my personality, it's me. But then that third person behind me is whispering, spreading, and that's the toxicity of the strata of the online community. And it's similar by work standards. You could say to someone, even if, let's say you're in a lunch break, and you're working for this big commercial film studio, and you say, you know, that Harvey Weinstein, I think he's a bit weird. I think he's a bit of a perv. Three people down will go, she called him a perv, called him a rapist. Yes, it's true in this fact, but you would still get fired.
And I think the disappointing thing is the fact that it's one that ruins it for all.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. I mean, I don't even get angry about it anymore because I'm just like, yeah, okay, get on with your life and I'll get on with mine. But it's frustrating to see other people go through it because it's just like, well, you said one thing that has been taken hugely out of context.
But I would never, in a professional sense, nor you, would say anywhere.
No, it's been amplified massively.
Because they're maliciously intended and they know that by taking issue... And because they're part of a movement or they're part of a structure, part of a societal structure, a movement, a subculture, or I'm part of the woke culture. Your woke culture is a load of bullshit because you're not waking up to anything. You're not waking up to the, like, you know, the devices you're applying. A lot of these people in these realities, they always apply it to left, right, left wing, right wing. What the fuck are you talking about?
Do you know what society means? Like, the actual definition of society.
Arseholes.
Society means the aggregate of people living together in a more or less ordered community. Now, as far as I'm concerned, there is nothing ordered about our community. And I don't mean the community as in, like, I live in this town and this is my community. I mean the community of the world.
In and amongst ourselves, rubbing shoulders.
What
just
the
being...
fuck is ordered about us?
No, there's a disorder.
Because all there is, you know, and it says about in the definition, it says about drugs, crime, and other things are a danger to society. So we can identify the things that kill people or that do people wrong, but we're not identifying.
They still don't even identify them properly.
No, but we're not identifying the things that are actually a problem to society, and that is ourselves. Because we've got so wrapped up into labelling things, into these movements. I mean, for Christ's sakes, that poor girl on Oh, Gogglebox. She turned around and she said that when she was, I don't know, playing, mucking around with mates, instead of playing it, they played Me Too. And because she said Me Too in a wrong context, you know the Me Too movement?
Yes, yeah, sadly.
Because she said Me Too in the wrong context, off screen.
The wrong people garner it. The movement did start from a place of people saying, look, Me Too, I've suffered this. There is community amongst us. And then people online take that and they imbue it with their fucked up ideologies, their biased opinions, their biased notions, and it just becomes a toxic environment.
But you know what the worst thing is? You can't even say Me Too now. Like, in general. So, like, somebody said to me the other day at work, and they said, oh, I'm having this really, really horrible issue with my IT. And I went, oh, Me Too. And I went, oh, shit, I can't say that, can I? And you know, this is the thing. Two words that we use on almost a daily basis, if not more than that.
And even if you said Me Free, they go, are you trying to be funny about what? You're trying to be funny about hashtag Me Too? Oh, Me Five then, fuck a duck.
Well, this is the thing, and the people that I work with, they were just like, what are you on about? And I was like, sorry, shouldn't have said that. They're like, what do you mean you shouldn't have said that? I said, well, you know, Me Too.
They're lucky they ain't been exposed to that type of environment.
And they weren't aware of what I was talking about because they're like me and the fact that they just say things and they don't think anything of it because they're just words.
But why does everything that we say have to be held up against a jury, like jury and executioner? Why does everything have to be held up for analysis and picked at?
And this is the problem with social media.
Yeah.
Because everything is there to be picked at, and you can, there are times where you can have a sense of anonymity and you can anonymously turn around to somebody and say, you fat bitch, and get away with it. And this is the thing, is the more anonymity that these people get and the more kicks out of it they get. Because the thing, I mean, we had some road rage the other week, didn't we?
Yeah.
So this van decided to absolutely screw me over royally. Really, really fucked, well, not just me off, but quite a few other people. And it was a close call, wasn't it? We both sort of went, shit, that could have been really, really terrible.
That's happened a lot recently.
So I popped up on Facebook and I just thought, I just put up a little post to say, look, mate, you're a bit of a div there. Please don't do it again.
Yeah, that online forum in hope that maybe someone might recognise what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Because that's the power of social media now.
And so a couple of people, I was quite grateful, actually. They went, oh, God, Laura, that's awful. You okay? You must be really shaken up. And I'm replying to them, like, thank you so much for your concern. I'm okay. My partner's all right. Don't worry. I was just a bit angry, you know? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. Totally understand. And then you get the people that goes, well, you were clearly in the wrong. Well, I'm sorry, were you there?
Were you in the car with me, darling?
Give me some more, and somebody asked me for some more context, and I was quite happy to oblige. I said, yeah, sure, and here's some more context.
A firestorm was ignited.
And it was, and I said to him, I said I was in the right-hand lane, I was planning to overtake, this guy absolutely, you know, he undertook me, and then he swerved into my lane, it was emergency stop, it was all a big, you know, it was a big hoo-ha, and this guy went, oh yeah, fair enough, love. And then somebody commented on it going, well, you shouldn't have been in the right-hand lane. I'm sorry. Again, were you there? No, you weren't. And the thing is unless you've got a dash cam, you can't prove it.
No.
And quite honestly, all I was doing was going on there saying, look, if anybody recognises this van,
can you just let him know he's a knob?
Let him know he's a bit of a div. Or alternatively, watch out for him. Because clearly, he was in a rush. Clearly, he wanted
to. And the comments section fired up. And
it did.
You had to laugh.
There's thousands. And you're turning around to me going, I don't know why you're involving yourself in such shit. I'm laughing. I'm reading it going, seriously, these people are so pathetic. They've got nothing better to
do. Well, I only know from experience, because I used to be one of those fuckers that would opine about something in the comments section and then get so heated and get into arguments. A lot of the time with the indie community. And this is the refreshing thing about it. Shit like this needed to happen for me so I could pull myself away from it. They think that they pushed me out. You didn't push me out. I took myself away and I'm much more freer for it. And I'm not in fear to talk about it because I know the truth. It doesn't matter that this part of this sect, this bizarro scene, this extreme horror scene, or Brian Keane, who's the gatekeeper to everything independent and literary. I don't care. I don't harm you. But you harm me with your aggressiveness, your lies, and not seeing things in context.
But that is more painful for them. Emotionally painful. They won't ever admit it. But that's more emotionally painful because actually...
Because I'm still writing?
You've made yourself a better person. You've created yourself, your character, not that, I don't mean character as in a fictional character, I mean, you know, this person that you have created.
My public
is you.
Persona, yeah.
Yeah, it is just you, and there is no facade behind it. There's no, you know, there's nothing false about it. It's just who you are. And the thing is that will hurt them the most, is that you have walked away from that situation, and you haven't come away going, oh, this, that. You've come away going, actually, look what I've done. Look what I've created. Look what I've done despite you.
Yeah.
Not because of you. Despite you. And I had a lot of this, you know, when I was younger, I had a lot of issues at school. And I took myself out of school way before I took my GCSEs. And my head teacher, she was not happy. You can't take yourself out of school. I was like, no, actually, quite rightly, I probably shouldn't have done. I managed to convince her because I said, I'm really aspirational, love, and I really want to do this. And I never actually pursued that dream at all. But I sat there and I said to her, I said, the people that are around me are so toxic that I can't actually stay in this environment. If you let me go home, I'll get my GCSEs. And she took my word for it. Now, you can do that now because things have changed, but she
No, they put you in a room with all levels of insania.
They'd already done that. But she trusted me. She went, fine. And I came out of school and I've got 6 C's and a B.
That's more than me.
But that's what I'm saying, and that is because of what I've done to create myself.
Because you knew.
This is Articulate Warbling with Zach Ferguson. If you want to find out more about the show or help the show, just search online for Articulate Warbling, Zach Ferguson. If you want to find out how to find Zach's books, or you want to write him or anything like that, just look for Articulate Warbling on Facebook. There will be links. And also, this is all hosted under pgttcm.com. And you can find links to Zach's show. It's not a rant, it's Articulate Warbling. All past episodes are there. We only host about anywhere from 4 to 5 on the actual podcast site itself. And to keep it fresh, to keep it moving, and to keep it going. So here's some more Zach and Laura, and we hope you enjoy it. And thank you for listening to Articulate Warbling. Thank you.
And I think this is the issue, is that, you know, you can't do anything now because so many people around you are so toxic.
I think the impressive thing with your case is you saw the bigger picture more than the teachers did, and you said to them, I know what's best for me. I'm going to take myself out of this toxic environment, and I'm going to sit in my space, and I'm going to work with my own volition. I don't need the distractions. I don't need the negativity. But you were kind of like, I need this to grow, and you did, and in a way you proved a lot, but you're lucky enough that your head teacher actually was on that level with you as an individual. It doesn't work that way anymore. Your numbers, you're categorised by different sects, and this is what I find really difficult. I had it at school, and this is the thing, you know, I told you about the year 4 thing. I went to a CAMS appointment, I came back, and they were midway through SATs, and it was an English one. And it was the ones where you read a short story, and there's these the huge wad of papers where you have a selection of questions that you either tick or cross off in context to the short story or the book. No explanation. And this was a teaching assistant who was there to teach and assist for those. So I turned up and I went, Miss, what do I do? You just tick what you think's right. That's enough. And because my brain doesn't work in such a way as anyone else's at that time, they were trying to diagnose me. But because I didn't have that great diagnosis, they didn't approach me as a child that needed a little bit of assistance. I ticked all that off. And because of that SATs, I was every fucking English class in high school therewith, until I built myself up and made a case, I was put in the back of the classroom in year 5, year 6, year 7. Year 7 was a bit of that stage of proof to us different, but it was the same case. Year 8, year 9, and it was year 9 where I'm thinking, why am I put in the back of the class with the kids who are obnoxious, don't want to learn, smoking, running around, causing issues? We're working within foundation papers that I know I can kill, but I think I'm above it. And so I didn't partake in it. And I said to them, look, I'm an avid reader. I want to be a writer. I'm really interested. Why am I contained within this environment? And I thought fucking hard for it. But just because of that one fuck up in year 4, it had that rippling repercussion.
And I think the thing is, there's And if my mum was here right now, she'd probably agree with me, which is about the only thing we do agree on, and that is grammar schools. So, and grammar schools wouldn't work for you, Zach, because of the way your mind works.
Yeah.
But grammar schools do work for some people, and there might have been an element of working for you.
Well, it's that case I told you, sorry, about if a teacher just sat down with me and said, look at this as if you're reviewing a movie or a book, I would have flying colours. But because it was work and it was expected, I rebelled.
But the idea of grammar schools is to actually consistently test you to see where you are, to see what level you're
at. No, I never got that.
No, well, you don't get that because grammar schools aren't about anymore.
Are they not?
And haven't been for quite a while, not here.
Why have they abolished it in the UK?
Because they haven't abolished it in the UK. They've abolished it in East Sussex. Because it doesn't work anymore. And that's right, it doesn't work anymore.
Oh, bruv team, what are you talking about? I'll be like, spit bars in a minute. I'm joking.
But the idea is that, and this is the thing, SATs are done, you are taught the stuff that you need to learn for your SATs test in your last year of primary school, which is year 6, not year 4. So I don't know what you did in year 4, but it wasn't SATs.
No, it wasn't SATs.
You do your SATs in year 6, and you get taught everything.
Well, maybe
you
it was
need
year
to,
6.
Yeah, you get taught everything you need to do for your SATs test in year 6. That determines what you're going to get in GCSEs. It's not definite, but that is a prediction of what you're going to get in your GCSEs. Right? That's how the system works, okay?
But it's still flawed.
That's how the system works. But the problem is, in my opinion, is the fact that we are doing these SATs at a stage where children don't know enough about what they're talking about, and we're not teaching them, I don't think, enough of what we need to be teaching them prior to the SATs exams. And what we're not doing is assessing these children throughout the years.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, we ask these kids to take 4 different exams.
Mm.
They've never done an exam before in their life.
Yeah.
It's the most stressful and anxiety-filled time.
Mm.
Then they go into year 7 with this expectation that they're going to do shit. And if you have a secondary school, and not many secondary schools do this, but enough do, if you have a secondary school that split their classes into what they call sets, which where you said you were put in a low set somewhere where everybody else was smoking or ADHD, autism, they all go in the same set because they're all at that low ability.
Mm.
If you get put into a set, the thing is, the only way they can find out which set to put you in is through your SATs results.
Yeah.
So if you have a bad day, one bad day, that determines what set you're in for year 7 until you can prove them otherwise. And 9 times out of 10, and I've had this in my experience, you're put in a set and you're not given the opportunity to prove any better because you are in too low a set for the teachers to take notice, because all they're trying to do is firefight against the kids that are punching, kicking and throwing chairs. And this is the issue. And again, this goes back to my point of everything is acceptable now, and you can't tell. I mean, when my grandparents were at school, they had the cane. When my mum was at school, they had a chalkboard rubber thrown at their head if they misbehaved.
Mm.
Now, you can't even touch a child on their shoulder when they're throwing up. It is that bad. You cannot touch a child. You cannot do anything. And this is the thing, we are teaching the youngest of these youngest humans that we can find that it's okay.
How alienating.
But it's not even about that though. It's not about the fact that you can't be touched, it's the fact that if you now touch a child will legitimately turn around to you and say you've just sexually harassed
me. Yeah. Well, it's like that autistic boy who's now got he's on the sexual offenders list because he kissed a student on the lips and on the cheeks.
Yeah. And I know somebody who has autism, and he walked up in his place of work to a friend who came into his place of work and gave her a hug.
Yeah.
Now, he thought she was a really close friend. He was quite low functioning.
Yeah.
He thought she was a really close friend, so hugging is appropriate, yeah, right? She, however, felt that they weren't close friends and that hugging was inappropriate. Not only did she think it was inappropriate, she reported him to his manager, where they then put him on a support plan.
Oh, fuck off.
And did a disciplinary against him because he hugged someone that he genuinely thought was a friend.
Mate, fucking, if they put you in that disciplinary, go around and fucking hug everyone. Even hug your fucking manager.
And to the point now where if he sees any of his family members...
What a spiteful fucking cunt.
If he sees any of his family members in his place of work, he is not even allowed to acknowledge their existence. So if his mum walks in, he can't say, "Hi, mum, you all right?" Nothing. He literally has to ignore her like she doesn't exist. And the thing is, this isn't about autism necessarily. You know, that brings me onto a whole new conversation, which I think will have to be for a whole new podcast session, to be honest.
Oh, we can do it.
The thing is that is allowing people to legitimately complain about things that are...
It legitimises it. And it makes it... And then it becomes a affirmed thing.
Yeah.
A known thing. A thing that is applicable and is actionably... Oh, just... By that, it, it solidifies that, that other person. Oh, you're right, sweetheart. Like, put your hat... Put like that assumption of your friends. And you're like, you're right, mate. And you're like... Pat a leg. It's that extreme, and that person could be having a really fucking bad day, or it's just a dick, and they're like, "That was really close to my ball bag." He doesn't know it was close to my ball bag, but it was close to my ball bag. I'm going to go report it. That legitimises it, and then it gives reason for other people to then think, oh, and even the more vicious, spiteful ones, they apply it and abuse it. These things are put in place so they do work for those who actually are afflicted. The same with rape charges. The same with actual things that happen. People abuse it, and it's out of context, and but people don't want to listen because it's easier to believe this victim, in quotation marks. And everyone, in a lot of ways, needs to be a victim, even on social media, even in work environments. People with supposed mental health issues. You say you've got mental health issues, but they isolate it around that one person. It's like that only one person within that environment is the only person with mental health, and you've got to tread carefully around them, and you can see it for what it is. They're playing up on it, and you're thinking, you really haven't got mental health, have you? You just applied this because, you know, within the hierarchy and how everything is applied now, societally and rules-wise, and within the infrastructure of that workplace, this school, that college. And I found that with people at college, like, you've got depression, or, well, we can't be dealing with you because we've already got one student who has that.
And this is the hard thing, I think. You know, me and you both suffer from different mental health issues, and it's a daily struggle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and there are days that, like this morning, I got up and I thought, oh, I cannot do this. I can't do this, but you know what?
Not going to roll with it and then run into work and go, guess what? I'm feeling really mentally vulnerable.
But not just that. But because I don't share it, I only share it with the people that are absolutely necessary. Because it's something that I'm not necessarily ashamed of, but not something that I want to go shout
at. You don't want it to define you and your actions and your happenings.
There are so many people I know that will sit there and they'll say, you know, I can't do that because I'm too anxious about it. Well, I'm sorry, but it's taken me 3 hours to get to work this morning because I felt really anxious and couldn't get out of my car. But you're all right, yeah. Hey? And that's, you know, that's technically a fictional example. Yeah. It's not something that's physically happening.
It's like...
That's the context of the situation.
Oh, sorry, Gilbert. Well, what's wrong? I don't feel well today. Oh, so you don't want to log out of your computer? I'll do it for you.
It's not even that.
Well, no, it's a terrible example, but that's...
Very terrible.
But that's how pitiful it is. Like...
So, when my friend phoned me at lunchtime, he said, right, so I'm going to tell you what's going on. I said, right, I've got 20 minutes, mate, so make it
quick. Yeah, because your break.
So he goes, right, so this woman, I went, right, yeah, she's been off work for 3 weeks with a psychosymptomatic illness.
What's that?
So that's something that it's an illness, a physical illness that has been caused by work-related stress.
Okay.
So she's been off sick for two, three, four weeks around that time. And she's returned to work and has returned to work now for probably the best part of a month. Great, okay. But she's still playing on it. Now, I'm not saying mental health disappears because I know better than anyone that it doesn't disappear. But what she's still doing to this day...
Oh, I think you told me about this, the one up in Kent.
Yeah. And what she's doing still to this day is saying, I can't do that, he'll have to do it. Now, he's taken on that work because she was off sick and he's a good fucking team player.
Mm.
And he said, don't worry, I've got this.
Is this one that you've worked with before?
Yeah. You know, I've got this, it's okay, it's fine, I'll do it, wait until she comes back, I'll explain everything to her when she comes back, I'll explain what I've done, I'll take it over, it's fine, because everybody's panicking, you know, everybody's going, oh my God, and I've had that situation at work, somebody goes off sick, you're like, crap, who's going to cover their work? Yeah. And he said to me, he said, you know, everybody was panicking, and he went, it's all right, I've got this, I'll take this bit. And he did, he took it on, and it was, he did it very gracefully, he didn't complain about it, and when she came back, he rang her up.
He's still doing that workload.
2 or 3 days after she came back, and he said to her, look, I've been doing this for you. I took it over because there were some, you know, urgent things that need to be done. Do you want to, should we just arrange a coffee and a catch-up whenever you're free? And I'll just run through
not
with
really,
you.
Yeah, not really pressing, basically saying, this is yours to do.
Yeah, just really nicely saying, you know, don't worry, it's fine.
But, trying to help her transition.
Yeah, exactly, it was. It was absolutely trying to help her transition back into her work. She turned around and she said, and it, you know when a friend's talking to you and it's really serious and they're really angry and you're like, don't laugh. And he goes to me, do you know what she said? And I'm like, I don't think I want to know because you're going to make me laugh. He goes, she turned around and went, nah, you've been dealing with it, you can carry on. Oh. And I'm like stifling my laughter, biting my fucking fist going, okay, yeah, that's not good. That's really not good. And the reason, and the worst thing is he reports it to his manager and he says, look, I haven't got time for this. I took it on because I'm a bloody good team player. But what the fuck is going on here? And they went, there's nothing we can do because of the mental health. And it's just flabbergasting. I love that word, flabbergasted.
Flabbergasting. Flabbergasted.
It is just so shocking that anyone can use such a big thing, you know, about mental health. And the worst thing is as well, I think if somebody's had,
it's like the managers are crunching up the eggshells and sprinkling it around for them.
Yeah. And it's like, but the thing is they have to, because legally they could do this and they could do that and blah blah blah. And
but this friend in question who fuck knows, for all I know, he could have his own issues at home, but he's not going to be wearing it on a fucking sleeve, is he?
No, exactly, because he's not that type of person. Very much like me and you, in the sense that, you know, yeah, we have a daily struggle, but it's not something that we sit there and go, oh, because it took me 3 hours to get in the shower, and even then I couldn't get back
because
out.
Because that mind frame, you're plaguing yourself, and then you're letting it determine your movements, and then you get so complacent with it, it personifies you, but it doesn't help anyone else around you, and it definitely doesn't help that person in question.
No, it doesn't. And it's so frustrating because it's all backward. That person is playing on it because they know that nobody can do anything because employment law states, blah, 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 that they can't do anything about it because they've got mental health issues. So they play on the mental health issues and it just becomes this humongous vicious cycle. Actually, it's not even
and it's
that
less
big.
About them it's being really... mental, and it's less about them being mentally ill and more about them shirking their duties and the job they're getting fucking paid for.
And this is the thing, and this is something that, you know, I've talked about in previous jobs, you know, I'm pretty happy now, but, you know, previous jobs, it's like you work your backside off, and I have really been a donkey, you know, I've really carried a lot of things for a lot of people, especially when I first started out, because you have to go down the shops and get coffee, because actually you're the lowest of the low in that environment, and you have to go and get those things, you have to be a general dog's body, and it's fucking exhausting. And it's not until my mum said to me when I was about 19, I said, Mum, please, I can't do this anymore. She went, you're going to have to wait until you're about 30, darling. That's when people respect you. I said, I can't go another 11 years before somebody respects you. And actually...
smacking my fucking donkey ass and going, hip, hop, go on!
But this is the thing, and it is right. I mean, I've got a lot more respect where I am now, but, you know, where I was before, it was just, there's just no respect because you're young and you will do what I will ask you to do, no matter what the problem is. And there is just no respect for anybody else or for anything else. And yeah, it does hurt. You don't see me, but I'm sitting here saying, I am better despite that.
Yeah.
You don't see me going, oh, I had such an awful time.
The thing
time.
That annoys me about this hierarchical structure, do you really have to always start from the bottom? It's the same with like the film thing. Like I've done some things on indie films like, as a runner, and they treat you like absolute shit. Like they don't take into consideration that you're human as well. But then they had this retort, you've got to start somewhere, you've got to start on the bottom. But what if I came in and said to them, I've actually made 5 indie films on my own. Yeah, you're still the runner.
Yeah.
We don't give a fuck. You need to work your way up. Work my way up to what? And you find that runners then get pigeonholed into the runner thing. Like I knew someone called, obviously I didn't know him that well because his name is Aiden. And Aiden, he was so complacent. Bless him. He's like, I love doing this. I went, doing what? He's like, getting Starbucks coffees. And I'm like, do you get one yourself? He went, no, I've got my instant coffee in my car. I was like, okay. So how long have you been a runner for? 8 years? And I'm like, for what? He went, oh, loads of production companies. And I went, did you want to start this? You've got to start somewhere. And I'm thinking, you haven't even bumped up to like assistant to director. Because assistant to a director is a really good position. Like that's the thing you want because you're close to the director and you will learn. You will learn. So I there was this small production company in Brighton that I got involved with. And I just sat there and I thought, I'm not going to be your lackey. I can't do this because I've got so much in me I want to share with you. You're not in that position, runner. Go get us what we need. But I want to talk to you.
You do have to start from the bottom there.
Do you?
Yes, you do.
But what
you
if
do.
I have a wealth of experience it doesn't matter. Outside it doesn't matter, of...
But you won't... And this is the thing. I skipped... I stopped college because it wasn't my thing. Academia isn't my thing. And
same
I did,
with me.
You know, and it's a well-known fact that I did my MVQ level 2 and 3 and I'm currently doing my level 4. You know, I started at the very bottom. I was employed as a business administration apprentice and it was the shittest time of my life. It honestly was. But I've learned a lot from it. And that was me starting from the bottom. And I haven't moved up within that company, but I realised after 18 months that I can do better than this because I could, because I was that runner, literally. I'd go down and get 10 pints of milk for everyone and bring it up.
But were you showed respect?
No. You cannot go into a working world expecting respect straight away. It doesn't happen like that. So I was a runner, but after 18 months, I said, no, do you know what? I've done enough of this running. Okay, I think I can do better now. But
it's also about who you know as well.
But so what I did is I went round and I said, right, okay, I've done a year and a half here. What can you offer me? And that's when I started working in the vets.
Mm.
Now, that wasn't great, but it was better than the last one. And you have to move up slowly. And the problem is, I think, is that, and that, you know, this brings me on to this sort of instant lifestyle that everybody lives. You cannot expect to just come out of school, college, university, and go into a good job, no matter how much knowledge you've got, no matter how many great ideas you've got. It's not something that's possible. And it's funny because so many of my peers that I went to school with, they've just come out of university, right? So I'm 22, so they've come out of university in the last 6 months to a year, right?
But garnering the deemed expectational things that you need from uni, so you can get into that position. But what if you're not in a position that you feel you can do uni, whether financially or whether emotionally?
So my point is,
mm-hmm.
is that they've all gone to university. Do you know where they're working?
McDonald's.
Primark.
Oh, nice.
Do you know how much they're earning?
Fuck all.
£15,000 to £16,000 a year. Did That's I go much. To college or university?
No.
How much do I earn? Significantly more than that. So.
£38,000. No, you did.
Jesus, I wouldn't be sitting here doing podcasts with you if I earned £38,000 a year.
What?
But
you probably wouldn't be with me.
No, probably not.
Probably be on a yacht somewhere.
Better than that.
How dare you?
But my point is the fact that you do have to start from the bottom, but people expect that because they've been to university or they've got this knowledge and this experience, or this is the thing, they haven't got experience, but because they've got this knowledge, they think that they can go in and they can start at the top, and that's just not possible. My uncle, actually both my uncles are businessmen by trade, really. One in a different way to the other, in totally different ways, but both very successful. And it's amazing really to see, because both of them always say to me, start from the bottom, work your way up. And I remember going, I can't start at the bottom. And I did, I washed dishes. I washed dishes for what felt like an eternity. I came home, I stunk of fish and chips like you would not believe. But I washed dishes over and over and over and over again. And all that gave me, other than disappointment, is literally all it gave me was work experience.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what work it was. It was work experience. And without work experience, nobody will employ you. And this is the thing with employers now.
Mm.
We want 5 years experience, but we want somebody that's 18.
But it's like, well, but you need, someone needs to start somewhere.
But this is the thing. We want 5 years of experience, but we want somebody under the age of 18. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm...
Will they even do that to you when you volunteered for numerous jobs and they had that attitude?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, they make you feel like an idiot. Like, I remember I went to the Heart Foundation and said, oh, can I volunteer? Well, what have you been doing all this time? I said, raising a child, being moved pillar to post, in and out of education. But what have you been doing? And I was just like, fuck you, I'm better than this. And I'm volunteering, I'm not going to get paid for it.
Yeah, well, they want a high calibre of people, and I get that, but you're not going to find high calibre of people in this society.
No. Well, I feel like that in a lot of ways, starting from the bottom, working your way to the top. I don't have any delusions that I'm ever going to be anything in this life apart from the indie artist, but I do see me... What I'm doing now in the indie scene is maybe growing, just getting that experience within the avenues of what I love. There's loads of other things that I want to do. I want to be a speaker, an advocate to talk upon autism. I want to be part of that structure and make a difference. But it's just so difficult to find gateways and structures for it. But yeah, there is a truth behind starting from bottom, working your way to the top. But sometimes, especially now, you're blockaded from even, you know, stepping a foot up the ladder in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You need to validate, well, why are you good enough to, what, be a runner, be your lackey? I don't know, mate. Do you make a mean cup of coffee? I think I do. What, with a machine? No, instant coffee. Well, fuck you.
That's the way life is. Everything's got to be perfect. That is, we are living in a world of perfection.
Whilst at the same time, it isn't. It's like a contradictory, almost like ironical sense. It's this delusion and this facade of everything being perfect and working, and the cogs and the pistons are, you know, in sync, and it's always well oiled and greased.
Yeah.
But it's scary. It is scary.
But I think not just as it's scary, it's reality. It's what we're living in now.
I look at our reality and how it's functioning politically, societally, specifically, and I think it's an unreality. And that's why I think I get great comfort from my artistry and my writing, because I can pick it apart and I can make it as it is, or I can rant or rave against it. Because I think the reality of life is an unreality, because it is like a dreamscape, nightmarish. There's always obstacles and hurdles and things put up, blockaded. And though they seem to be well-intended to begin with, these movements, everything is so malformed and transformed and transmogrified beyond recognition. And you're like, what does Me Too mean anymore? For sensitive crybabies online to take it up on themselves. Like the LGBTQ community, I have no stand...
LGBTQ+,
extra, extra large, you get me, fam. It's like... Even if you don't say it properly, you're vilified. Like, even you just automatically just corrected me.
Yeah, but I corrected you because I know because that you're going to get a load of people going, it's LGBTQ+.
I don't have time for those people because they're not part of the community, because they're not adding anything to it. Like, this is what I was saying about left-right. You have to be the certain thing. Well, a lot of these people think they're left-leaning progressives. They're actually more right-minded and totalitarian than the right are. Like, personified as right-wing, they're just like, you're going to shoot my gun in the air. The left are like, ooh. Pontification. Labels. Why do we need labels? Why can't we be we, us, I?
Because there is such a lack of identity now.
Yeah, it's true. You're not allowed to have a personality.
That we have to identify ourselves. And there is an element of me that gets that.
Oh, yeah.
Because we are so false now that we have to label ourselves. And I do understand that, but I mean, I take issue with, it depends how you want to say it, but I pronounce it cisgender. I am cisgender, apparently. I've been informed. I am cisgender. Now, cisgender, for you, Zach, because you probably have no idea what I mean, and for everybody else that has no idea what I mean, means that you still associate with the same gender or sex that you were born with, i.e. I was born as female, I still associate myself with female.
But what else?
Right, okay, so you were born male, right, Zach? And you still consider yourself to be male, correct?
Well, it's up for contemplation, because, like...
Don't say things like that, that really...
Because I can tuck my willy inside myself and I can look like a woman. But anyway, no, I identify as male, but why does that have to be labelled as cis? Cis?
Cisgender.
Why?
Because they have labelled everybody else, so they have to label us too. Now, when it first came about, or when I first learned of it, it probably wasn't when it first came about, because it probably came about 3 years ago, and I came across it like a year ago. But when it first came out, I turned around and I went, no, you can't be serious. Why can't I just be me?
Yeah, that's true.
It's not even, like, when somebody says to me, what are you? I don't go cisgender, nor do I say female, quite frankly. I go, I'm Laura, nice to meet you. Who are you? I don't, you know, you don't sit there and go, I'm male.
Mm.
You know, I don't have a thing, I don't have a t-shirt that's got female written across my boobs.
Well, it's like scary, like that person who reached out to me and they were like, oh, a fellow transgressive gay.
I don't even know what transgressive means, but I was a little bit intimidated by it, I'm not going to lie.
And, it was like, no, I'm not gay at all. And it's like, oh, it's just very rare that a straight man writes gay fiction. Why? It's very strange that a man writes queer fiction. Why? And then it's like they want to open up this secret door that I'm this or that, and I explain to them. And then all of a sudden it's ranting about the community and how they're doing them wrong. And I said, look, I don't abide by labels. I think the LGBTQ plus thing was a well-intended thing, but all of these incels and online crybaby boo-boos are using it for their own agenda. So then it's invalid to those that it should mean to people. And it becomes a fashion, then it becomes a trend. I've met so many numerous people, gay friends, close and personal, who go, no, I don't, I'm just gay. I'm gay, I'm in love with a man, I'm in love with a woman. I'm not defined by the LGBTQ, I'm not part of the movement. It's become more of a commercialised thing. I'm just in love with a man, or I'm just in love with a woman. I'm in love with the same sex. I am just me. And that's what I believe. I think that general labelling terms of gay, queer, it shouldn't have existed anyway. Let anyone do what they want within reason. If you're a paedophile, you're disgusting and deserve to die, a rapist, but you know what I mean? Like, why should we pick up and question people's? If you love someone, you love someone. Why do you have to? And I believe we should live in a world where all these labels and terms, they open up a can of worms and make things worse for movements, for peoples, and for selves, and for people not. I've spoke to numerous people who said, I'm gay, but I don't want to come out. It's like, why? Because I don't feel like I'll be part of the movement, or I don't feel like, and I feel like then I'm in denial of who I am because I'm not part of the LGBTQ+. And it's like, come out and give yourself room to love who you want to love, make love with who you want to make love with, have nice fucky-fucky with whoever you want, whatever you play it, whatever your positioning is, whether you're monogamous, androgynous, or whatever the fuck it's called. Do you know where I'm coming from at that? Do you know? It's not... But people can easily associate it with, like, you don't support gay people. I do. That's why I write queer fiction. Because it's just a normality now. It is just life. People love each other, whether they're same-sex or not. Just let them live. But then these people online, or these certain progressives, they're not progressives, they're regressive, because they're making these environments and these safe places that were originally there, they're personifying the label and just poisoning it.
Do you remember when Pride was just about two men or two women
being able to come out in public and say we're together?
Having one day where
they could be accepted, yeah.
Yeah.
Nah.
You know, and gay pride is huge in Brighton.
It's commercial. Huge.
And
it's a moneymaker.
I went when I was younger. And you could consider me to be part of the problem. Because I went because it was an excuse to go out with my mates
and get
really fucking pissed. And this is the thing. And it's not
no,
just...
but you're not waving the flag and then making a big crisis out of it if someone doesn't have the same opinion as you or have the same positioning as you. You went there because you just used an excuse to get drunk.
But everything is just an excuse for another thing now.
Exactly.
Everything is an ulterior motive.
Yep.
There is nothing that is, you know, that's innocent anymore.
No.
Pride used to be about two men or two women or, you know, two trees.
But society deeming that this is your one day that you can be out and celebrating.
But this is the thing, is that Pride was put in place in order to give those people an opportunity to be themselves.
Mm.
And now they still can't do that because you find the worst, you know, the worst forms homophobes.
Are
there. And it used to be, the day that gay pride was on, all the homophobes would hide away and, you know, have a wank to straight porn and keep it at that. But now, they've got to turn up. They've got to be there. They've got to be there with their torches, screaming at these people, going, you can't do this. This is against this right and that right and blah, blah, blah. God said you can't. I mean, don't even take me on to God. But, you know, God says you can't love another man. You have to love a woman, blah, blah, blah. And it's painful to watch, you know, because I just... I mean, I've said this when I said earlier about the people that are of a different race. You're just fucking human. Mm. And do you know what? If you're a woman and you look at a dick, and a bit like I do sometimes, and go, I really don't want to put that in my mouth, I don't blame you, love. And go and find a vagina that you would much prefer to lick and go for it. Same with guys. If you look at that gaping black hole and go, no, thank you, go and get with another guy and suck his dick. Who the fuck cares? Why can't we just live in this life together, just amicably, civilly? Just, okay, you like men, great. You like women, fantastic. You really, really want to marry your saucepan, you go for it, girl. Like, I don't care. Just, and this is the thing, is that everybody, we went through this stage where everybody was supposed to be you. You're just supposed to be you. Just be who you are. Find yourself and be you. And now you can't even do that because it's wrong.
No, be the best gay person for the community now.
But it's not even that. Be the best gay person, but also don't be gay.
Mm.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Be the best gay person you can be. However, I don't really condone the fact that you also like dick. And I take issue with that. Because it's just, it used to be, you know, we went through it. Do you know what? It's actually worse than when people were genuinely like shot in the head for being fucking gay or arrested or hung or whatever.
But
at this point, that would actually be better, I think, than the way we're going. Because the way we're going, we're just ruining everybody and it just creates more mental health issues that everybody can play on. It just causes more issues that we already have issues with, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, I couldn't get past that very strong analogy. But yeah, it is like...
The fact that I don't like dick?
No! What? Anyway, no, it's a case of like that attitude where someone, but they do, in certain countries, they hang people for being gay, they hang people for being in love, and they do shoot people, but and people do go out as their own little vigilante squads, anti-gay squads. But the reality is, by actions of certain people, that is your opinion that they might as well just pull out the gun and just execute them.
Yeah.
And that is the most scariest thing.
But it actually causes less problems doing it that way.
Fuck.
Not because, and I'm not saying it because I disagree with gay people or you know, any of these different
no, I completely see what you're coming from.
Fluidities or sexualities or gender, whatever. It is, you know, there are so many words that I don't know and I'm probably literally being the most discriminatory person indirectly right now. But my point is I haven't got a problem with anybody. I never have had a problem with anybody. What I take issue with is that we are in such a society now that we have to be so unaccepting of each other in order to be accepted generally that we've just got to the point where, do you know what? It's not even gays that need to be shot. It's fucking everyone.
Yeah, everyone else. It's not the blacks. It's not the Asians. It's not the mixed races.
But the thing is it's just everyone. And the thing is you'll then find that one guy is an absolute twat. He's gay. Well, that doesn't help his cause, does it? Because he's gay and he's a twat. What, shoot him? Not because he's gay, but because he's being a fucking twat.
Yeah.
And I'm not sitting here saying like, oh yeah, shoot all the gays, shoot all this and shoot all that. No, just literally just obliterate the human race because we are...
We're doing it. We're slowly doing it.
We are well and truly fucked. We're fucked.
With our attitudes and our positionings and our negativity.
Yeah. And that That is it. It is negativity. It is fear of being unaccepted, you know.
Unaccepted.
Not, yeah, unaccepted by society. But equally...
But then they want you to be in that box, within the parameters, within that quarantined zone.
But then tomorrow, that box will be different.
Yeah, it will.
The box will have moved, and now we're not in that box anymore. And you go, hang on.
And you have to conform to it. But why should we have to conform to it?
Do you know... Did you ever play Sims when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Right, so you remember when you used to build the pool, get all the Sims in the pool, and then take the ladder out?
Yeah.
It's kind of how I feel.
Shit, that's good. That's good. You, like, might as well take over this podcast,
like,
now.
Literally, like, they've taken the ladder out. Next thing I know, and do you remember how you used to be able to leave the Sims in the pool but then delete the pool? And then they'd kind of be sitting there in the concrete pretending to swim even though there was no swimming pool.
Yeah.
And then the swimming pool moved,
I love it
with
the motions.
I know.
But...
And then the swimming pool's moved, right, to another place within that little, yeah, that little area. And now they're expecting you to get over to that swimming pool and now you're still fucking swimming in the fucking grass.
Yeah.
Like, you can't... And this is what I'm saying, is it's literally, we are pawns in a game that I don't even know who's ruling it. Because it's not necessarily politicians, it's not necessarily big wigs and big people and big icons.
It's the underdogs on their computers.
It's the anonymity again, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's those people that are sitting there, anonymous, having a wank to whatever they're having
but
a wank
to. But these anonymous people will pick up on something like you said, like, wow, we're in a position where you might as well shoot gays. And they would take it out of context... And then...
Laura said we need to shoot gays. No, I absolutely did not.
Exactly. And that's the... And I'm sitting here, and those thoughts... I shouldn't have those thoughts churning, that worry. But I fucking do. Because they can then go out and try and castrate you, and you're like, oh, good luck, fellas. I'm a woman. No, you're not. You can't say that. And there we go.
But this is the thing, and I can use my gender to get away with a lot of things.
Yeah, no, you can.
Lots of things. And there used to be jokes about women getting out of, you know, it was in like American TV programs about them getting out of like speeding tickets with the police. You know, they unzip their top, get the boobs out and go, oh, I'm sorry, officer, put on a few crocodile tears. Done. And this is the thing. It's got to the point now where you can actually kill someone and get away with it because you're a woman. That's where we're going to come to.
And we are in an era where the male is the predator.
Yeah. But the thing is...
Well, there is toxic masculinity, but even the underdogs, you find the underdog who has lived the right life, has tried to do their best, they may have slipped up here and then, and they want to atone for their sins. You are still... You're in the wrong because you're fucking male,
but
boy.
One single slip-up with anything now makes you a terrible person from the very beginning.
Yeah.
All you have to do is say one wrong word, make one wrong action, and you're a terrible person. And do you know, it's so hard because, and I still can't mention where I work purely because it's just too difficult to deal with. But it is that fact of,
or is
if
that,
I say
you're
to
not
someone,
allowed to have a certain.
No, it's not that. If I say to someone, I work for this organisation, they go, I'm not talking to you now because you work for them.
Mm.
You have got to be fucking kidding me. Do you know whereabouts I work in that organisation? No, I don't care. You work for that organisation. Right, okay, so you're going to discriminate against me because I work for a specific organisation that you have taken issue with once.
Yeah.
Right, so because Sainsbury's sold you a packet of lettuce that accidentally had a caterpillar in it and I work as a checkout girl at Sainsbury's, you hate me because I work for Sainsbury's because of the caterpillar incident 10 years ago. You have got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the way life
That's
goes.
The petulance of many.
But it is the petulance of society.
Yeah.
And that is what we live in now.
Just a load of old fucking boo-boos who want to take issue because that validates their reasoning on
this
earth.
It's what we call snowflakes.
Yeah. Oh, don't fucking say that, you right-wing bitch!
It's a snowflake. Everybody's a snowflake.
I got bullied in the community because I said that you're all snowflakes. Like, you're a Trump supporter. Trump has no bearing on me. I hope
what
not.
What snowflakes got to do with Trump?
Because he uses it, and you're right wing.
Oh. Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Even if you go bing, they're like, Trump does that, and it's like, okay.
But this is the thing, like, just because I say something in a certain way, I've got a certain accent, or I say a certain word in a different way to other people, it automatically, oh, well, you sound exactly like so-and-so, right? So that means that I'm going to set bombs off in Iran, does it? No, I don't think it fucking does. It just means that I pronounce a certain word a certain way, or I say a certain thing, or I have a certain mannerism that is similar or the same in which that somebody else in higher power uses.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we all fucking speak English, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, between us and America.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm a Trump supporter, does it?
No, it's that simplicity of mind. Yeah. And whilst they're absolutely, objectively against it, it's like, but you're creating that problem for yourself. That's not just your opinion. That's your misguided judgment and your narrow-minded viewpoint. Like, people say to me, oh, you're a bit of a radical. I said, no, I am just nihilistically, pessimistically optimistic. And then suddenly someone said to me one time, so that means you're a fence sitter? No, I'm not a fence sitter. I'm out of the fringes of reality. And sometimes I say it because it's a nice notion. But I'm as much part of society than anyone else. But
do you know what I think you are? You're the same as me. Mm. Is you sit here and sometimes you sit back and you do sit on the fence and you watch. Other times you're part of whatever's happening in society, usually for the positive rather than the negative.
Yeah.
But more than anything, you express your opinions, which you have a right to do.
Mm.
And this is the thing, is that so many people go, you're over-opinionated. No, I have an opinion, I express it. If you want to take it as that be me being...
You're jealous, bitch, because I can express it articulately whilst warbling.
Nice little bit of marketing there, and I don't think anybody heard you click, because your clicking isn't very good. But...
Do it for me, quick. Bitch! Anyway, continue.
But, you know, that makes me opinionated. Because I have an opinion. No.
Yeah, that is true. If you have one opinion, whoa, you're really opinionated. Because you're a fucking hollow husk who follows the trend and what old Mr. Smithy is saying. You conformist prick. You bastard, you.
There is no one that I have met, bar probably about 10 people in this world, that have their own opinion. They follow the opinions of others until that changes. We are sheep.
I hope I'm not one of them.
Well, in some cases we are, I think.
No!
But in some cases we do.
I am the shepherd. No, I'm not.
You should see the face, guys, that he's just pulled. It's the most ridiculous, like, I think I'm constipated, kind of almost going to cry.
Go on, take a photo so we can have it included in the show notes.
No, I don't think we should. I'm
a shepherd. Follow me. Fuck, man. Fuck.
It's deep.
It is deep, and it's kind of depressing.
I feel like we need to, I don't know, get some leprechaun music to follow this. Sorry, that's discriminatory against people of the Irish nature.
As this show slowly fizzles to an end. Don't call me a faggot. Don't call me... Oh, fuck, that Christmas song. I'm not allowed to.
You can't say faggot now, Zach. You can't say any of these things.
Well, I have a segment in my book, The System Compendium, and it's called Queerly Happy Whilst Contemplating Faggots. And I went up to a friend of mine, Andrew, who's gayer than gay. I said, Andrew, is this offensive? He went, oh, you little bitch. I went, what? Good or bad? He went, I wouldn't, but you bitch. And I was like, is this good? He went, I love it. Because it's playing up with that expectation and that taboo. Like, I said, what did you accept yourself as? He went, a queen or a bitch. As you can tell, Andrew likes saying a bitch. But he also went, in my day in Scotland, I can't do a Scottish accent. In my day in Scotland, I was a queer. And I was like, really? He went, yeah, I was a queer boy and I loved it. And I'm like, see, that word has a complete different meaning to him. Then if you said that to a community of supposed together gay people, they'll go, how fucking dare you? And he said, I like it because it reverts that negativity that is imbued with the things. I said, so do you like it? And he went, oh, you controversial bitch. And then he went, I love you. Then he hugged me. And then gave me a kiss on the cheek. And that was probably why he got fired from the position that he did. Because he was very touchy-feely.
Not allowed to be touchy-feely.
No. Because what happened, he came running at it because he worked at a certain establishment. I won't mention it. I just mouthed where it was to Laura. And he was lovely. I loved him. I loved Andrew with all my heart because he was real. Because he came from the same backgrounds. He had that experience. And he came out. And one day he went, oh, Zach's writing a book about me. And the manager just gave him a look like, shut your mouth now, Andrew. And then anyway, I came sauntering in because I hadn't been for a week. I went, where's my Andrew? And he came skipping out like a fairy. He went, I'm here. And I grabbed him, and I did. I gave him a big hug and said, I fucking missed you. He went, oh, Dad, you've got to be careful. Don't want the staff to know you're my toy boy. And because he had that interrelationship with a few other people, I think he ultimately was sacked, but not only was he sacked because of that, because he came from the same backgrounds as everyone else, he had that affirmed basis to be opinionated and not like how the system was going. And all of a sudden, he's disappeared, and I said, where's Andrew? Oh, no, like he didn't exist. And I bumped into him, and I said, what happened? And he went, and he just like waved his hand, and that was enough that I needed to know. But in a lot of ways, it's like, it goes back to that's the whole intention of that whole segment in the book. A straight guy writing as a gay guy. But the cliched, what a straight guy thinks that a gay guy thinks of.
But then you can't blame people when they think you're gay.
No, I don't at all. But I am quite camp.
Because, yeah, we know. But, you know, unless...
But what does it matter if I'm gay or not?
It doesn't.
No, but why do people have to like straight away they're like, oh, so you're not gay, so why do you write gay fiction? Gay fiction isn't all the shit I write, but a lot of the contextualizations and stuff I write about, it does. I talk up on homosexuality. Also, I like playing up with expectations. I like fucking with the audience. I like the idea that I write such a compelling gay love scene that even a straight male goes, I've got an erection. But straight away, he's like, I fucking hate this book, and throw it at the wall. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from.
But then people come away from that and go, oh, he must be gay, or he might be closeted. No, not in the least, but even if I was, what does it matter? It
doesn't.
No.
Of course it doesn't. You're not, though, right?
Right, Laura, I'm just going to admit something to you. I'm not gay, but if Tom Hardy came walking through the door now...
Oh, so hang on. We've gone from Jude Law to, like, some other guys that I can't think of off the top of my head. Charlie, what's his face?
Only, no, I will wake into a hanky when Charlie Hunnam is smoking.
Right, so Jude Law, Charlie Hunnam, now...
Tom Hardy. Henry Golden, I'll just sit on a bench with him and hold his hand.
Right, you're really not doing any favours for yourself or for our relationship, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, no, it's all right.
So I'm slightly concerned about who you're thinking about when you're doing me now.
Well, you know.
Oh, we made a promise before this podcast.
Yeah, this podcast is... It's actually about, it's all a symbology for me bending Laura over a table and doggy styling her. That's the truth. You know, at the end of the day, this podcast was going to inevitably leave here about what a voracious sex life Laura has, her and me. You know, we're at it every evening, up to the breaking of dawn. No, our relationship pretty much ain't predicated up on banging. And the people who have that POV, you're kind of like, what world do you live in, mate?
Yeah, but many people do, they do believe that sex is the only thing in relationships. And sex is healthy in a relationship, but it's not something that either of us feel that... I mean, we've both been in relationships, haven't we, where it's an expectation. You will have sex with me 3 nights a week for 4 weeks...
Or you have a fucking ex-girlfriend at the end of the bed sobbing and you're like, what's wrong? You weren't reacting to me. Well, what were you doing? I was waking you off while I was in a deep sleep, you dumb bitch.
Yeah, well...
I'm not going to get a tent hut. Yes. Make do whatever you want. In a way, that's like sexual harassment.
Well, it is.
That is sexual harassment, isn't it?
Sexual harassment. But you can't get her done for it because you're a man.
Exactly. But I wouldn't want to get her done for it because it's pitiful enough that she was crying at a limp dick. Anyway, was there anything else that was on the agenda? Or have we covered bases? I know that we need to do an autism episode separately.
We do.
In a way.
And I think there needs to be one about feminism too, because you know I could talk for hours about feminism.
Oh, fuck yeah. But I think this has been a good ep.
It has.
I think it's been another good episode. And I think the context and there's so much to talk about, but I wouldn't want to talk about it with anyone else. And this is a thing, like, look. Well, anyway, people say, you said that, some people have said to you, but why are you doing it? And you're like, well, we're going to have these conversations anyway.
That is very true. We have said that. It's basically just recording us having the same conversation we would have had without recording it in the first place.
Exactly. It doesn't take much for us to...
The only thing is I kind of feel like I'm having a bit of a danger wank in the fact that I know my mum's due home any moment. I know that I'm going to be sitting here, like, ranting away about society.
A danger wank?
Yeah, it's like a danger
wank. I've never heard of that.
Have you not heard of a danger wank? Right, a danger wank, right, is literally when you go...
Right before your mum's going to, like, walk in.
Well, no, but it's not just about your mum. It's about, like, going to do it in a bush, like, knowing you might get caught.
Oh, my God, I've done that before. I was in year 7, and I was walking through the woods to my nan's, because I used to go to my nan's before school to eat something.
I have my hands over
And I've
my
just
face.
Leaned against this tree, and I just started masturbating. Who comes through the bushes to clearing? My fucking nan. It's like, hello, Mozaki, will you make your way to me? And I'm like... Hi, Nan. You all right? Oh, what's that? Nothing. So that's I have had a danger wank.
Anyway, my point is that fact of, you know, knowing that my mum's going to walk in and she's going to go, honeys, I'm home.
Well, or hiya. Or she's actually, bless her heart, she's so considerate. She's probably outside waiting for us to shut the fuck up.
I've come off it. But yes, it has been good, and I think there are lots of other things that we will most probably talk about, providing you'll have me back. Which...
Of course, we're going away up to, where are we going?
Well, it's not really up, it's over.
Over.
To Andover.
We're going to Andover for my birthday, which I'm really looking forward to, because we're going to the Discworld Emporium. And whilst we're in the hotel, we might, instead of complaints that they're banging really loud, it's complaints that we're talking really loud.
You can imagine this, like, this receptionist coming up, knocking on the door. Sorry to bother you, but you're making a lot of noise and it's 3 a.m.
We're articulately banging! No, we're not. We're just articulately warbling.
Yeah, well.
But I hope that we can make nice messiness on the hotel sheets. From froth and spittle from our words.
Yeah, well, I'm not David Tennant, so you're not going to get that from me.
Ah, Salonzi! It's David Tennant! Ah! Doctor Who! Mate, when that 3D episode with him and Matt Smith came out, you were like, fuck, ducking away from the spit. Yes, I was sad enough to see the 3D episode in cinemas.
Could you imagine if they did 4D?
It would be bucket loads. And David Tennant comes out and does the interview, does a special interview after, and then that's when people actually get the umbrellas out. Anyway, it's been a fucking fabulous episode.
Even if Zach did talk for literally 80% of the time.
I didn't. I think I did, maybe. I don't know. Might have to tell you. But it's just, I'm happy that you're going to do it. You're going to be a frequent guest because it's fun and I like it.
And I'm the only fucker that wants to.
Yeah, well, that's the truth of it. Like, I could ask DB and DB knows this. DB turned round to me once and went, that was a great interview. And I'm like, DB, you didn't even ask me any questions. You just let me rattle on. And that's where the thought of the podcast came from. He's like, fuck me, this fat British kid don't shut the fuck up. I might as well just let him go on and on and on, which I am now. But thank you for joining us. It's going to be a frequent thing. I'm not just going to talk about, but what I want us to do, I want us to read a same book at some point.
Ah, fat chance of that, unless you're going to read Cecilia Ahern or Jojo Moyes.
I can try.
Okay, we can both read Skellig. I'm good with that.
Oh, yeah, shall we?
Yeah, I think we should.
Because that would be my because I've been reading a lot of David Ellman recently and his work with Dave McKean, and yeah, I think we should do that. I like that.
The Skellig's like the easiest book to read, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's a children's book, but exactly. You get.
I loved it though. Even my mum said the other day, she was like, "You love that book." I'm like, "I know, right?"
Yeah, but there are certain children's books that are just like, you know.
They're like classics, aren't they? Yeah. Like, all-age classic.
Well, it's so classic that it got its own anniversary edition.
Exactly, which I really want, so I'm going to have to steal that. Shh.
It's only £4 on Amazon.
Do I look like I've got £4 in me after the £100 holiday I'm taking you on?
£100 holiday?
Fucking. That sounds really fucking skimpy of me. It was much more than that, guys. Loads more. Loads, loads, loads.
I'm going to end here. She's a stingy bitch. Ow! I'm going to get her done. She hit me. Oh, yeah, harder, baby. Anyway, thank you for joining us. I'm probably going to have to compress this because we have gone over the 40-minute mark.
To 56 minutes.
But thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
It is goodbye for me.
It's still just going to be bye.
It was goodbye from hell.
Hey, everyone. It's over. It's over. Episode 16, Articulate Warbling, is over. Society at an impasse. Is society an impasse? Contact Zach. Let him know. If you have opinions, Zach has opinions. Let him know what your opinions are, or don't. Articulate Warbling is on the Facebook, and you can always contact Zach through the Facebook. Just Articulate Warbling. There's a ton of Zach Ferguson, so you might have a little bit of a harder time there. And if you are interested in other podcasts that are produced through People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, PGTTCM Productions, Badger's Drift Studios, or Sweat Drenched Press, that's Zach's production company, studio, press, whatnot. And I am Badger's Drift Studios, and thank you so much for listening. There'll be a next one next week, where Zach will be talking about history of the word cunt. So there's that to look forward to. And we've also got a travel log of Zach and Laura in the English countryside. And episode 18 will be pros and cons of publishing. So keep an ear out for that. Thank you so much. And thank you for supporting Articulate Warbling. Remember, go to the show notes and find yourself a t-shirt to support the show. Peace.